Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, and we're reading my work-in-progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 11. As soon as Pastor Lovett announced that the annual church cakewalk would be held on the second Saturday in April, Eula steeled herself for what she knew was coming. Sure enough, she felt a fervent tapping on her shoulder as though someone were typing out a telegram.
"Did you hear that, Mother Eula?"
Elise whispered from the pew behind her.
"A cakewalk! They'll need cakes for a cakewalk."
Eula gave a quick turn of her head and whispered back, "I did indeed hear that," and then put a finger to her lips, hoping to discourage any more discussion of the matter. The last thing Elise needed to do was enter a baking competition. Not that it was heralded as a competition, but everyone knew that it was. Rumor had it that in past years, some very unchristian-like behavior had occurred when the music ended and a cakewalker found himself one seat over from Luella Larson's carrot cake or Anna Lobel's German sweet chocolate cake. Hips were bumped and sometimes outright pushing occurred. But no one was going to get pushed out of the way for Elise's friendship fruitcake or her orange dream cake. Maybe by next year she'd be ready to take her baking public, but next month, Eula shook her head. Highly unlikely.
"Maybe just a chocolate cake?"
Elise asked later that afternoon as she and Eula were preparing Sunday dinner. Elise was stirring beans on the stove and Eula was carving a ham on the tiny table pushed into the kitchen's cramped corner.
"Something simple. Sometimes a simple, straightforward cake is what people are looking for."
Eula sighed. "I think the point of a cakewalk is to put your showiest cakes on display. I attended last year's, and it was a sight."
"Did you enter?"
"No, that was right when we first started going to Hopewell Church," Eula said. "I didn't want to..." Her voice trailed off.
"Show off?"
Elise asked with a smile. "Something like that," Eula concurred. "Not to say my cake would have got much attention. There are some women at that church who have won blue ribbons at the state fair."
"Well, I'm going to keep practicing, and next year I'm going to make the fanciest cake of all the cakes there,"
Elise said, head high.
"You have to admit, my baking has gotten a lot better this year, and it will get better still."
Looking around Elise's tiny kitchen, Eula marveled that Elise had room to make much of anything in here. The little house that Elise and Matt currently made their home in had been built for field hands, and while over the years a few rooms had been tacked on and electricity had been installed, the kitchen seemed stuck in the mid-19th century. Elise was lucky to have a good enough stove, a sink, and an icebox. But fortune hadn't blessed her with any counter space to speak of, and there was only one cabinet to store her plates and bowls. "Just imagine when you and Matt get a bigger place with a bigger kitchen," Eula told her daughter-in-law. "It's so cramped in here, I'm impressed you get anything done at all." Elise gave Eula a sideways glance and tried to hide a smile. "What?" Eula said, turning back to the ham she'd been slicing. "Was that funny?"
"No, just prophetic, I guess."
Elise shook her head and sighed happily as though there was no use keeping the news to herself.
"Matt and I ordered a house."
"You ordered a house?" Eula put the carving knife down and turned to Elise. "How on earth do you order a house?" Elise laughed.
"From the Sears catalog. And we're going to build it right here." Tom's agreed to sell us 5 acres of the farm, and Ralph Tompkins on the other side of us says he'll be putting his land up for sale in a year or two, and he'll offer it to us first. Mother Eula, we're about to have a home of our own and land of our own to boot. Eula took a deep breath. She didn't want to put a damper on Elise's enthusiasm, but she found it hard to imagine that she and Matt had saved enough money for a house, much less farmland. Well, how are you going to afford it?
Tom's letting us pay off the land over time, Elise said, ticking a list on her fingers. And we're getting a government mortgage loan for the house.
You're buying a house on credit?
The question came out of Eula's mouth before she had time to consider it. She'd pledged from the beginning to stay out of Matt and Elise's business, but she didn't think highly of buying on credit. She'd witnessed more than once how that could become a bad habit. Elise was silent for a long moment. When she spoke, it was in a quiet, measured voice. Matt and I work hard, and we save every penny we get. If this were 10 years ago, we might have gotten land from you and Dad, or maybe my folks would have helped us buy a place. But those aren't the times we live in anymore. If we want a house, we're going to have to borrow. We'll pay off the note as fast as we can. Don't you worry.
Eula nodded, chastened. Maybe Dan and I can help you with that.
Well, that would be real generous, Elise said, turning off the flame under the beans and wiping her hands on her apron. In the meantime, I need your help finding inexpensive furniture. We don't have much of our own, not much more than a room's worth, really.
We've got the baby things, Eula reminded her. Dan's already painted the crib and the rocking chair.
She paused, thinking about where else they might find a table and chairs, maybe even a sofa. Bess most likely had furniture in her attic she'd be willing to part with, and Florence and Emmeline probably did too. Dorothy had given what she could spare to Hannah, but she might have some ideas about where to shop for good quality, inexpensive pieces.
Eula was about to get out the serving platter for the ham when she noticed a smile playing around the corners of Elise's mouth.
Is there something else you need to tell me? Eula asked. Don't tell me you're planning on buying a car on top of everything else.
The kit for our house is arriving at the end of April, and that's not the only thing arriving around that time.
You're not due until July at the very earliest, Eula said. So I know it's not the baby.
Elise's words practically exploded from her lips.
Johnny and Doug are coming to help build it. We're going to have a barn raising.
Only it's not a barn, it's a house.
Eula steadied herself against the icebox. She hadn't seen her two younger sons since the summer before last. They'd been good about writing letters, Doug especially. But letters were no substitute for a person's actual presence.
When are they coming? And where are they staying?
What am I talking about? They'll stay with us, of course.
Tom's got a room he says they can have for the duration, Elise said, and then stopped herself. Though I'm sure they'd rather stay with you and Dad. Of course, that would put Maisie out of her room.
We'll figure it out, Eula said, too excited for practical planning. I'll sleep on the floor if I have to.
What kind of cake do you think they like? Elise said as she pulled the plates from the cabinet. I'd like to bake them some cakes when they're here.
Eula untied her apron and headed for the door to tell Dan the good news.
You do that, honey. Those boys will eat anything.
Mother Eula! Elise exclaimed. And, then much to Eula's relief, began to laugh.
Well, there's a Sears house on my street, Caroline Meacham exclaimed after Eula told the Monday night class Matt and Elise's news. They built it 5 years ago. My two youngest watched every bit of it going up. Kept them occupied for weeks.
The other women in the group joined in, adding their own reports. The topic seemed to be dying out when Lena Weatherford offered shyly,
That's what me and Morris had.
We got the Valonia model right before the crash. We didn't build it, though. We bought it from my aunt, who was moving to North Carolina.
Why'd you move? Evelyn Hale asked and was quickly shushed by Louisa Stott, who was sitting next to her.
Evelyn shot Louisa an annoyed look.
What? It's a perfectly reasonable question.
Morris died, Louise hissed.
Why do you think she moved?
Oh, I would have stayed except the baby got sick in the fall, Lena said, seemingly unperturbed. That's when Morris's mother, Mrs. Weatherford, insisted I come live with her. It worked out because Morris's brother was looking for a bigger house than the one he had.
So you sold him the house? Evelyn asked.
Why, no, I gave it to him, Lena said, sounding as though selling the house to her brother-in-law had never occurred to her. He's family.
I guess that's one way to get a free house, Evelyn muttered, squinting at a needle she was trying to thread. Steal it from a relative.
Betsy Schultz coughed lightly and cleared her throat.
Mrs. Baker, I sure do like meeting here. It's a lot easier to spread out than it was back in the library, and the light's so much better with all those windows and it being daytime and all.
A flock of voices chimed in, as though to draw attention away from Lena, or, more to the point, away from Evelyn's opinions on Lena's housing situation. Everyone agreed that the third floor of building number 5 was ideal for quilting in so many different ways, and meeting on Saturday afternoons was so much more convenient than Monday nights. Eula smiled as she laid out a new block on the table closest to the window. Most of the women in the group were in their late 20s and early 30s, and in some ways they seemed to her like the daughters she never had. They were good women on the whole, friendly and thoughtful, and if Evelyn Hale was the exception to the rule, well, that was just the way of things. Eula had yet to be part of any group where there wasn't one person you wished would go away. She could remember in the early days of the Wednesday Bee how that person had been Emmeline. But over time, Emmeline had settled down and more often than not arrived to their meetings with her better angels in tow. Eula had to admit she'd grown concerned lately. Ever since Dorothy had stopped working for Bess, if she had to pinpoint an exact date, that Emmeline found Edwina to be, well, a problematic figure. Maybe others did as well, but they were better about hiding their irritation. Emmeline had never been one for hiding her opinions or her feelings, even when she thought she was masking them. They played across her face and infused the tone of her voice. She might as well carry a sign with her. Edwina had a strong and undeniable presence in the group. There was no doubt about that. Eula mostly found the woman sensible, although maybe a little too sure of the rightness of her opinions at times. Still, she was 77 years old, had raised a large family, and traveled a good deal, which was to say she'd lived long enough, experienced enough, and seen enough to be a trusted source of wisdom. Overall, Eula found Edwina was a fine addition to the group. As for her pushing Dorothy out of a job, maybe that wasn't such a bad thing. Dorothy herself had said that she didn't mind giving up physical labor. She'd even confided to Eula that once the cafe was up and running full steam ahead, she'd make more money working for Florence than she'd made working for Bess. So there was that. No, as far as Eula was concerned, the only real problem with Edwina was that she changed the feel of things. But if you looked at it one way, the group was always changing. It had changed as they got to know one another better. It had changed when Florence started working so much and only made half of the meetings, if that. Elise hadn't made the kind of waves that Edwina had. Her presence barely caused a ripple. But she, too, was a new character in their Wednesday play. Eula knew as well as anyone that the fact nothing ever stayed the same was one of life's constant lessons. Emmeline would do well to ignore Edwina's more egregious opinions, or to make her own opinions known, if she felt so strongly on a given matter. But that's not how the Emmeline Grangerfields of the world worked, Eula thought. Maybe that's not how most women worked in general.
Instead of pushing back directly, they found indirect ways to make their displeasure clear. An insult veiled as a compliment, a jab disguised as a joke. She turned to the group, holding up a finished hen and chick block. "You ladies are going to enjoy this one," she announced, and a flock of eager faces turned to her.
"That's just darling," Lena smiled at Eula. "You always have the best patterns, Mrs. Baker."
"I'm told that Mrs. Baker is the best quilter in the county," a male voice announced from the doorway. A moment later, Arthur Purefoy made his way into the room, waving at the group. "I'm sorry to interrupt, but Florence, Miss Grangerfield, wanted my opinion on the fourth floor's new layout. Your lively conversation lured me in."
"Like the sirens," Caroline Meacham said. "I've always wanted to be a siren. Too bad I can't sing."
"That would make him Odysseus," Lena offered shyly. She looked up at Arthur. "I love ancient Greek poetry. The more ancient, the better."
Arthur's smile brightened. "Yes, I feel the same. Homer, Pindar, Anacreon. I've spent many an evening in their company."
"And the playwrights? Are you fond of them as well?" Lena asked. "Euripides and Aristophanes?"
"I studied them in college," Arthur said. "Took several classes."
Lena looked at the floor. I never went to college."
When she raised her head again, a shy smile graced her lips.
"I went to the library, though. The downtown library in Columbus was 10 blocks from my house, and my brothers and I walked there every Saturday morning."
That's a beautiful library," Arthur said. "I assume you've been to the one here. It's a Carnegie library as well."
"I go when I can," Lena said, "when I can get my mother-in-law to take care of the baby for me."
"Does your husband drive you?" Lena cast her eyes downwards again.
My husband passed away."
Arthur seemed to absorb this information. "I'm very sorry to hear that, Mrs.
Weatherford," Lena supplied. "Lena Weatherford."
"Well, Mrs. Weatherford, it's a pleasure to meet you." Arthur looked around the circle. "It's good to see all of you ladies. I suppose I should be on my way."
"Who was that?" Lena asked a moment later. "He's awfully nice."
"He's Miss Grangerfield's fiancé," Evelyn told her. "Which is to say, he's unavailable."
Lena's cheeks went scarlet.
He...
"Ladies," Eula clapped her hands, "do you want to learn how to make this block or not?"
"That's why we're here," Caroline replied cheerfully. "And I, for one, can't wait."
After the class ended, Lena Weatherford stood back from the exiting group.
"I'm awfully sorry, Mrs. Baker," she said as she pulled on her hat. "I feel terrible that I was so inappropriate talking to Mr. Purefoy that way."
"You weren't the least bit inappropriate," Eula told her. "It's no crime to have a conversation."
"But you were about to start teaching."
"Yes, and Mr. Purefoy came in and introduced himself, and Caroline mentioned sirens, and one thing led to another. It would have been rude not to speak to Mr. Purefoy, don't you think?"
"But I didn't have to carry on so. Only I do love books and libraries and ancient Greece."
"Sounds like Arthur. Mr. Purefoy does too."
"Yes, but..."
Lena hesitated before she continued.
"I don't think it's proper to have conversations with men who are engaged."
Eula gave her a long look. "Mr. Purefoy is less engaged than you might think." Lena's face brightened, and Eula wished she could snatch those words out of the air and hide them under her bag. What on earth had she been thinking, saying such a thing? She'd always taken a firm stance against gossip, and speculating on romance was the worst kind of gossip there was.
"You knew what you were doing,"
Dorothy insisted the next day when Eula confessed her error. "Maybe you didn't know you knew, but you knew." "You're talking in riddles," Eula said. They were sitting in Dorothy's kitchen, which smelled heavenly. Blueberry pie today. "I didn't know a thing.
I'm just turning into a dim-witted old woman.
You're turning into a wily old woman, Dorothy corrected her, which is unlike you, it's true. But the fact is, you saw a flicker of interest between Arthur and that woman, and it caused you to suspend your best judgment.
Eula shook her head sadly. If I felt the need to speak my mind about Florence and Arthur's engagement, then I ought to have said something to Florence, not Lena Weatherford.
Dorothy shrugged. But you did, and I'd advise against trying to correct your mistake. Mrs. Weatherford doesn't sound like the sort of woman who would pursue a man, especially not a wealthy, engaged man such as Mr. Purefoy.
I suppose not, Eula agreed. I'm just so ashamed.
Young people will push you to your limits, Dorothy soothed her. If Florence doesn't marry that man soon, I might write a letter to the editor of the Milton Falls Gazette to lodge a complaint.
Eula laughed. Maybe Emmeline could write her next farmer's wife column about it.
She could call it Double Wedding Ring or Wild Goose Chase, Dorothy quipped. And Eula laughed so hard she had to go into the next room to make herself stop.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.